Well, hello, Central Ohio, Columbus City. Here we sit today, the City League Sports Show. I'm in the Legacy Lounge. You know, we've had a little bit of time off, but we have a legend in here with us today. We have the one and only Coach Marv Bohannon. I'm your host, Dr. Vince Clarino. We about to run some plays. And I say run some plays because you've done a lot of stuff, Coach, but you've been primarily a football coach.
Correct.
So, Coach, say hello to everybody real quick here in Central Ohio, man. Just say what's up.
What's up, Central Ohio? I'm happy to be here, happy to be in your presence. For me, I'm the most blessed man on the planet.
Oh, love it. That's a beautiful way to start, man. Mm. You know, let me share this, right? For people who are maybe listening to the show, watching the show, streaming it, whatever their platform is that they're using, I don't know. Like today we're going to get into how bad of a guy you are, man. Like, you know, for me, as a young educator in this school system, and growing up, first learning of you and knowing of you from afar, and then having some rare opportunities where I got a chance to just chop it up with you and talk to you. I think you're just a phenomenal human being. I think you're a bad dude, man. I've shared that in multiple places. But tell our listeners, how do you become an educator? Let's like get into a little bit of that. Like how do you end up how do we end up being blessed, and how do you become an educator?
Well, for my story and my background, I think my parents had a tremendous amount of who I am and what I am. My brothers, I got four brothers and a sister that's passed away.
Okay.
But our family connection.
Where you at in the brother realm? You the oldest?
I'm the middle.
In the middle.
I'm in the middle.
All right, got you.
So being in the middle, who I am, I'm a reflection of everyone in our family.
Okay.
You know, my parents put values in us. If I say something about me, and I'm saying it about my brothers and my sister, and the community that I came from. You know, we grew up in the country, just placed north of Dublin, Ohio.
Okay.
Went to Dublin's, you know, public schools, and it was an African-American community of this small neighborhood. A lot of people don't know the history about it.
I bet.
So those families and those individuals that we grew up with helped shape me who I am today.
Okay. So now I kind of get introduced to you and get to know you from like basically East Side Columbus, Ohio, right?
Correct.
So tell me how you go from West Side in Dublin at the time, a Dublin that people don't know,
but, right? Correct.
Because you're talking about what, the 70s maybe?
A little bit past that. As an athlete and student at Dublin in the 60s and 70s.
60s and 70s.
Correct, because okay. I came out in 75. But before that, coming up during the Civil Rights Movement.
Okay.
You know, and being in the country part, we were sort of isolated, really knowing what was actually going on, but seeing the times and the changes at that moment.
Absolutely.
As I got older, I understood it more and more clear, but I understood what my parents were trying to do.
Okay.
They were trying to keep us away from that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I was born in Georgia.
Okay.
Being the middle child, I was about 6 months old when my parents left Georgia.
Okay.
If you know anything about the civil rights,
right.
For being a young African-American family with boys, and like I said, I got one sister.
Yeah.
We finally realized my parents moved from the South to the North mainly for that purpose. So there's a lot of history tied into that. And one key thing in the community that I grew up in is a place called Lucy Depp. And as we grew up, I didn't know it was an historic, they made it an historical site about 10 years ago.
Okay.
And there's a barn right across the street from us. It was part of the Underground Railroad. If anybody wanted—
In Dublin, Ohio.
In Dublin, just north of, in Dublin, Ohio. You're exactly right. West side of the river, about 1 mile. As you go across the O'Shaughnessy Dam, 1 mile north, there's a place called Lucy Depp. I call it four quadrants. And it's like four sections, two sections on the right, two sections on the left, and they were African-American families that lived there.
Yeah.
And there's been some great student athletes come out of that neighborhood as well as,
you know, and you're speaking to it. See, like, people who come to Columbus now, Central Ohio, and even for me, I know a little bit of this time period, but when you were growing up, there was only one Dublin High School.
Correct.
You know, there was only one Pickerington. There was only one Westerville. There was zero Olentangy. Well, there was one Olentangy, right? Now there's five or six of them or whatever the number is out in Olentangy, right? Correct. And so we've seen massive growth here in Central Ohio. Yeah. So you graduate from Dublin High School, which one of the Dublins is it now?
Now it's Dublin Kaufman.
Kaufman. Okay, so you graduate from Dublin High School, which has now become Dublin Kaufman.
Correct.
Where do you go to college, and then we're going to jump right into Columbus.
All right, from Dublin, it's amazing that I went to college because I had an older brother, and myself and my brother, just older than me, we always followed his lead.
Okay.
You know, and we were involved with football, baseball, track, basketball, et cetera, et cetera. But football, for me, as I got older and we were in high school, especially 10th grade, was probably one of my critical year.
Yeah.
My oldest brother was a senior, and I can remember two-a-days. Two-a-days were absolutely painful.
Right.
And I can remember tying my shoes up one time and going through my mind, I'm saying, why am I doing this?
Right, okay.
Because it was something different. You know, the coaches back then were old school.
Yeah.
And if it wasn't for my oldest brother, we would ride with him. I was following his lead. Mm-hmm. I'd be hurting. I didn't want to go in my mind. I didn't want to go the next day.
Right.
But because of him and my other brother, I hung in there.
Certainly, okay.
And so that was a big part, understanding sports and what it took and the commitment and the expectations. You know, that's what I loved about the game.
Okay. So when you left Dublin, though, where'd you go?
All right, from Dublin, I went to Ohio University.
Okay, with OU. Okay.
And I was there from 75 to 79.
Back when it took two hours to get to OU from Central Ohio.
You're exactly right.
We didn't have that little strip of corridor on 33 to just zoom on down there.
Exactly.
You had to weave all the way down
and go through some little small towns, to get there. You're
absolutely
exactly right. And for me, it's something totally new. Mm-hmm. You know, history-wise, my parents' educational background went up to the eighth grade.
Okay.
And but history-wise, college wasn't a big thing. Mm. I can remember in eighth grade, I can remember one of my teachers saying what me and my brother were going to be. And in my mind, I didn't argue back.
Right.
I just said, how in the world could they make a statement like that?
Right.
At that time, they said we were going to be garbage men, pick up trash. But, you know, garbage men now get paid well.
Absolutely.
It's a great profession.
Yes, indeed it is.
You know, so at that time, and you know, growing up, it was looked on, this is the only thing African Americans could do.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so eighth grade teacher made that statement.
Yeah.
In my mind, it lit a fire in me.
Well, you know what? I'm glad it lit the fire because exactly. let me share this, right? And I talk about this all the time. I share this with coaches, I share this with teachers, and I have a slide. You know, when I do our preseason head coaches meetings,
mm-hmm.
and it's titled "The Power of Your Words."
Exactly.
And you have no idea the impressionable position you're in when you're a teacher and a coach, and you say something to a kid.
Correct.
Right. And here you are, and you're sitting here 50 years later and can remember a conversation you had with an eighth grade teacher,
correct.
Right? The impressionable moment that they have on you. And like you said, it lights this fire. So now let's dive into it. You start teaching. Let's get to some of the fun stuff, right?
Right.
So because for us, you're one of our legendary coaches, man. And I share this. Let me share this with people. All you coaches out here listening, if you can catch up to this gentleman that I'm sitting across from right now, offer him a cup of coffee, a sit down. Are you a coffee drinker?
No, not a coffee drinker. But I'll tell you what, I'll drink water,
okay.
Soda pop,
okay.
Whatever. I'll
yes,
do
indeed.
That.
Yes, indeed.
Okay.
And I say that jokingly, but offer this gentleman, if you can, coaches, and I'm talking about you while I'm talking with you right now, offer this guy, if you can get him to sit down and share some wisdom with you, coaches need to learn from you. They need to have an opportunity. But so now you start coaching for Columbus City Schools when? And then we're going to just take off and have some fun with this stuff here.
Actually, in 1980, I was with Pickerington, which is now Pickerington Central.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But at that time, I was did my field experience as a teacher under a gentleman named Jack Johnson.
Okay.
And out of Pickerington, he was a legend out there.
Yeah.
And if you ever saw him, you would swear he was a clone of Franco Harris.
Mm, okay.
But I was in his class. He inspired me so much because he gave me an opportunity to work with him as an assistant coach.
Okay.
Without ever
having
saying,
a lot of
experience, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
He saw my desire, how much I love working with the young people, and he actually gave me a great part of the takeover of the offense.
Okay.
So here's what's interesting with working with Coach Jack Johnson. At one of our games, I would go home, and my wife and I, at that time, out of college, we lived on at McNaughton Square. I don't know if you were there, on the east side.
Square. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
right there off of Livingston.
Exactly. Yeah. So I go home, and I got to pick her up because at that time, money was scarce.
Okay.
We had a car that barely cranked it sometimes, you know,
okay.
Back in the day.
Yeah.
But she would take the bus to work, so in the evening I would have to pick her up, and my goal plan was to head out to Pickerington because they had a game. At that time, we had an away game. I got in a car wreck. On the way to pick her up, I never even got a chance from the wreck to get to the game. And I was devastated. Number one, didn't get a chance to pick my wife up. Now I got to worry about how she's going to transition, getting home.
Yeah.
And then I got young people depending on me and a team for my position as an assistant coach.
Yeah.
From that point on, for the next 20 plus years, on a Friday night, I never left school because of that incident. You know, Mr. Clarino, I'll call you coach sometimes because you sound just like you're a coach in yourself.
I appreciate you sharing that,
And so we're sharing great information with each other. So from that point on, I stayed after school. And one thing I found out, like you want to call me a legend, I'm a legend because I've been surrounded by great people.
Okay.
Administrators, teachers, and most important, the young men I got a chance to work with.
Wow.
I'm great because they're great.
Yeah.
I'm here because they gave me an opportunity to do something I love doing every day of my life.
Well, let me share this real quick. I didn't mean to dive in. The best coaches bring out the greatness in kids.
Mm-hmm.
The best coaches bring out the greatness in kids, right?
Right.
I see a lot of coaches, and they can't find a way to build a relationship with a kid to help that kid reach their true potential. And sometimes that means being tough on a kid.
Correct.
Right? Sometimes, and when I say being tough, tough for kids is accountability.
Correct.
That's it. There's nothing else to being tough for kids.
Exactly.
If you just hold them accountable to their actions, you're being tough on them. And that's okay. Kids need to be held accountable because that's how you learn, in my opinion, right?
Right.
If every time I, got knocked on the head for doing something wrong, if I had to live with those for a lifetime, I wouldn't be sitting here today.
Correct.
Right? So the kids that you had were great because you brought out their greatness. You held them accountable. I can remember early on, I don't even know what the situation was, but you were in and around over at Independence, and you were coaching. And we're going to get to that. And I remember I was over and I was doing something, and I had to stop. And I started watching one of your practices, and I said to myself, like this is amazing. It was like watching, a master artist paint the most beautiful picture. It was like watching a chef cook the most amazing meal. The relationship that you had with the players and the kids that you were coaching, they all grabbed and held on to your every moment, your every word. So you start coaching then at Independence. When does that happen?
In 1981, 82, okay. I was an assistant coach under Roger Farinato, and some of the assistants like Dan Smith, Jim Harper. Jim Harper was a great head coach at Merriam Franklin at one time also.
Yeah.
And so I was an assistant coach. And the thing that fell in line with me at that time, I was 24 years old.
Okay.
Getting ready to turn 25 in the spring in March. And Farinato leaves for California.
Okay.
I'm a two-year assistant, 81, 82, going into the 83 season. He leaves for California. And two-a-days always started on a Wednesday back in the day.
Okay.
So what happened was it was almost too late for them to interview for a football coach because I think we had like 2 or 3 days before two-a-days started.
Okay.
And I remember the principal calling me in all the because I ran the weightlifting program that summer.
Right,
and the
right.
players, you know how players vote for you. We want Mr. Bohannon. And players still do it today.
Yeah.
And the principal was nervous because I'm a young guy.
Absolutely.
So he said, Marv, we're going to make you the interim head coach. It's okay with me. All I need is the door open.
Yeah.
Because I grew up back in the day. You give us the door open. That's your opportunity to make things happen.
Certainly.
And like I said, I've been blessed. So that's part of my blessing right there. As interim head coach, we went 8-1-1 that first year. They made me head coach from that point on, and I never looked back.
Off and running.
Off and running.
Off and running. So we won't be able to encompass all of your work in 30 minutes. Just there's too much there, right? But you spent the majority of your head coaching time, if not all, correct me if I'm wrong, between Independence and Eastmore. Is that fair?
Right? Correct.
So East Side person, Independence, Eastmore, and I know a lot of East Side people because I'm an East Side kid. I went to Walnut Ridge. Somehow you never stopped over at my stomping grounds, right?
Right.
I would have been fortunate to be one of your kids.
Right.
But so I say that to say, like, I don't know the exact time periods of when you were at one or at the other, right? But some names that jump out at me at Independence are, you know, the Harper boys.
Exactly.
I remember Eric Hall was running around over there and doing some special stuff. Coach Douglas, who's the current head coach. Did Coach Douglas play for you?
He played for me.
Okay. So give the Independence listeners then and give his kids – what was Coach Douglas like?
All right.
Let's pick on Coach D for a second.
All right. Let me share this with you. From 83 to 86, I'm the head coach at Independence, right? And in that window of 83 to 86, Coach Douglas happens to be one of my athletes. And at that time—
We're gonna put his governor name out there. Maurice.
Maurice
was one of your players.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And He was a tailback.
Okay.
But at that time, older than him.
Could he move? He was hitting the hole, wasn't he?
He was gifted.
Okay.
He was literally gifted.
Yeah.
But there's some seniors that I had that were, when you got seniors. Just
absolutely.
And we made him a flanker at that time, a wingback by nature at that time. And he had some highlight runs himself. But the thing about Coach Douglas, Maurice Douglas, is his desire for the game.
Because
I would drive, like we would work out. I mean, we work out all year long. All year round, we work out. Because that's what you got to do.
Absolutely.
Academics, number one.
Yeah.
Conditioning in the offseason, number two.
Yeah.
And for me, every young man that came across my path, they know I talk about academics come out of my mouth. We're running and conditioning or whether it's practice. When we take that 2 or 3 minute break.
Right.
I remember one athlete says, Coach Bohannon, all you talk about is classroom, grades, academics, because I know that's your future.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's your window of opportunity. That's how that door is open. But to get back to Coach Douglas, he would listen with both eyes and both ears every time.
Yeah.
Wherever we did in conditioning, he would be there. And his goal was to be first. He never wanted to settle for second. That's what made him great.
Okay. Okay.
He was the outstanding student. I think it was just his mom at that time, if I could be mistaken. She's an outstanding parent.
Yeah. So but good support team.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He's an outstanding young man.
Yeah.
So he's been with me as a player. When he went out to Kansas, we talked back and forth. He's not the only one. A lot of kids that go off to school, we always converse back and forth. Then when he came out of Kansas. He even coached with me from Independence to Eastmore, back to Independence. I went back to Independence in 2000 to 2005. And every trek of the way, he's been with me.
Yeah.
And I knew he was going to be a head coach. And I knew he was going to be an outstanding coach because he had all those intangibles.
Certainly.
So
you've seen, I mean, the number is too many to count. Countless kids go off to college and play football. Mm. Big time, you know, from every school out there in the country. Like you said, from Kansas to schools in the Big Ten and everything in between.
Correct.
Right? This is only for coaches right now. We're going to start with coaches. What does it take? How did you find all this success? What's the recipe? For all our coaches, if you're listening to us in the radio, pull your car over right now. turn your volume up. Turn off the distractions, whatever it is. To our coaches, what's the recipe for success in football, high school football?
One thing is that care factor. Mm. You're more than just a football player for me. First of all, you're a young man.
Yeah.
I see something that right now you cannot see. And if you listen to me and know that I'm telling you the truth, my goal is to help you get to where you want to get to. Yeah. It may not be a career in football, but as long as football is there, because you'll find out a lot of young kids to do what you have to do in football, the practice, the conditioning, the hard work, the sweat, you got to love the game.
Absolutely.
And what I found out, I don't care what school you're at, kids love the game. Mm. But the thing they're missing is that component is what's my foundational piece that I need once football's over.
Right.
One guy told me NFL means not for long. Mm-hmm. And that stuck in my mind.
Okay.
Football is only a tool to get you where you want to be.
Certainly.
As a productive citizen.
Yeah.
In our country, in America.
Yeah.
Like our school policy is creating young people for global success in a global economy. Certainly. Right.
Yeah.
And in football, as coaches, we're trying to make our young people successful. When they step out, they can compete against anybody in the world.
Yeah.
And that's the greatest thing for me. Working with young people, when they come in, they're going to know, and know the word gets around. Mr. Bohannon, Coach Bohannon, they know your standard, know what you expect. Nothing takes the place of the classroom.
Yeah.
Your teachers are golden. Mm. When you step between those doors, that's where my heart and desire is. And when you step on the field, kids are going to give you practice.
Certainly.
They're going to sweat.
Yeah.
But you give me the classroom, it'll open doors for you.
Okay. So you bounce over to Eastmore for a little bit of time.
Correct.
And then like you said, then you went back to Independence. While at Eastmore, you had some special teams over there also.
Correct.
Right? Are there any years, and we'll touch on Eastmore, Are there any years that kind of jump out and that you remember? I mean, like you just said, which I think is, hey, like you just said, you go 8-1-1 your first year.
Correct.
Right.
Right.
So are there years, and it doesn't necessarily have to be Eastmore, but are there some years that stand out a little bit more than others?
Let me back up to Independence real quick.
Yeah, please do. 100%. That's why I changed that question.
You know what's interesting? When I came out of college, you were ambitious. I can remember sitting down on a Sunday writing out my goals for life, right?
Yeah.
And I wanted to be a teacher and a coach. My goal was to be a college coach.
Okay.
And my plan was, in order to be a college coach, you stay at this place a couple years, move on and be successful, move on to the next place, right?
Absolutely.
Ambition, correct? Yeah. One of the most painful moments in my young life was in 1985, 1986, there was a group of young men that they were with me since they were freshmen. When you mentioned the Harpers,
yeah,
Sean Harper, Roger Harper, Rod Harper, Larry Dickerson.
Mm-hmm.
That group of young people. And one thing I do, once I start mentioning that, I leave somebody's name out.
Yeah, that's okay.
Hurts me to death.
So many kids after 40 plus years.
So that group, when they became, they were going to be seniors. And Eastmore job came open in 86. So I'm on my ambition kick.
Right.
Look, I interviewed over at Eastmore and they offered me the job that summer and my wife cried. At that time, I got an older son, my son and my daughter, and my wife cried. And the hurt I saw on my seniors at Independence mm-hmm. hurt me. It's something I never expected.
Yeah.
I've never understood because I've never been in that position before. And I found out a lot of coaching, when coaches move from point A to point B, it's your seniors mm-hmm. that get hurt the most.
Yeah.
Because you built that
relationship
with.
Absolutely.
And I understood relationships with young people at that time were so important. My wife cried. She said, I loved Independence.
Right.
And there's like we had a young man named Sean Martin.
Okay.
He used to work for the district also.
Okay.
After he finished, you know, school and everything, he was a security guard and school security with the district.
Yeah.
And my daughter loved him to death because when they were younger, I had him over at my house after one game early in my career. I had him over and all them guys stayed the whole night.
Yeah.
And that was important for my family. It was important to my wife that I didn't know at the time.
Yeah.
But after that, seeing that, I really made me take a second look at the college ambition. Because mm-hmm. I had a couple opportunities to leave and move on to the college ranks.
Yeah.
So with that said, with Independence, has some really nice teams. And the key thing is, when I left Independence, went to Eastmore, my first year at Eastmore, I had one of the quarterbacks was named Poncho Shavers, Alonzo Shavers. And the seniors were the hardest ones.
To win over.
You're exactly right.
Yeah.
Because Brian Cross at that time was the head coach, went to Grove City.
Okay.
And I remember Alonzo Shavers coming to me one time and during a game, and he says, I called a play. And some plays he could audible out of and some he couldn't.
Yeah.
And he comes over to the sideline and said, Coach Bohanna, what if I had an audible out of that play? What would you have done? I said, you'd have been standing next to me.
Absolutely. Yeah, come on.
And he understood. And he was a funny guy. If you understand Alonzo, he's an outstanding young man. Great humor. And as a senior, when I said, you'll be standing next to me, he understood the message. And all of our seniors got the message that
accountability.
Accountability, exactly.
Yeah.
So that group of kids with Kip, there's some other players with that group, Kelvin Elder, and a group of young people with that first group of seniors.
Yeah.
Those guys become special because now they got to accept me in.
Absolutely.
Then after that, 92, 93 year, Marcus Ray, Keith Demme, Savon Edwards.
So is it fall of 92 or fall of 93? Ain't this fall of 93, I think?
I think it's fall of 90. I could be wrong.
So their junior year, you're talking about?
Of
with Ronnie and those
Ronnie
guys?
And those guys.
Yeah, Ronnie and Savon in their junior year.
Exactly.
Okay, all right, I'm with you, all right.
And then eventually, when their junior year, I tell you what, we had some injuries that hurt us real bad. I know Marcus had a severe injury. Savon had a knee surgery. We had went down to play Xenia.
Okay.
And we got hammered pretty good. But
regular season or postseason?
Regular season.
Oh, regular season, okay.
But the next year we go back, when those young people are seniors, they were an outstanding bunch also.
Yeah.
No matter where I've been, I've had outstanding.
I keep saying, but you pulled out the best in kids.
Kids.
That's what makes them outstanding kids.
Exactly. You know, an interesting thing with the Independence in Eastmore, because I've been Independence, Eastmore, back to Independence, the young people are exactly the same.
Yeah.
It's like, there's so many things I can share with, like you said, time-wise. So I'm going to try to stay on this track here. So their junior year, we had injuries. And then coming back as seniors, they were a special group.
That's all the time we have today on WCBE 90.5 FM. To hear the full show, you can find the City League Sports Podcast on Spotify, Apple, or whatever platform you prefer to listen to your favorite podcast. You can also follow us on Instagram at City League Sports 614. Until next time, I'm Dr. Vince Clarno, and thanks for listening.
Do you love amazing stories? I know I do. I'm Michael Kent, and every week on my show, we examine something from history that's so unbelievable it sounds made up, but is 100% verifiably true. It's a podcast called The Internet Says It's True, and there are hundreds of episodes to choose from. For example, did you know the story of how Leonard Nimoy came up with Live Long and Prosper for Star Trek? Or how Columbia is dealing with a hippo problem that goes back directly to Pablo Escobar? Or one of my favorite stories, a man figured out that a nondescript Winnebago being auctioned online was actually an important part of space exploration history. These are all stories from The Internet Says It's True. Listening to a podcast has never been easier. You can listen through any popular podcast app, through the NPR app, or download the fantastic new WCBE app, click the Podcasts tab, and look for The Internet Says It's True with Michael Kent. You'll have so many stories up your sleeve, you'll feel like the smartest person in the room, especially if you're home alone.
Hi there, this is Morgan James. Every album represents a step in an artist's journey. Hello, music lovers. I'm inviting you to listen to Music Journeys with Mike Foley. Mike mixes music and conversation with artists to share what informed and inspired their latest project, how the love of music began, what music means to them, and so much more. We've chatted about three of my projects, the most recent being Soul Remains the Same, a soul album of songs you would never expect. You can always expect the perfect combination of music and stories on Music Journeys. The show airs Saturday afternoons at 3:30 on WCBE. Recent episodes are available on the major podcast platforms and the WCBE app. To meet and hear more from all the musicians featured since its start in 2018, including me, to be the first to be featured three times on the show, look for Music Journeys on WCBE's podcast experience at WCBE.org.